My name is Daryl Holness, and I am a Hurricane Katrina evacuee. Since the storm, I have worked with a project entitled Surviving Katrina and Rita in Houston. Through this project, scores of individuals like myself who were displaced to the Houston area by this devastating event have worked to collect the stories of their fellow survivors. Here are some of their stories. In working with the Surviving Katrina and Rita in Houston project, I have been struck by how many people have stories to tell about their experiences on the bridges of New Orleans after the storm passed and the floodwaters rose. All my life, the concept of the bridge has been a positive one, a path that leads to the other side, to new beginnings and fresh starts. As I listened to my fellow survivors' stories, I realized that, just as Katrina had turned everything upside down, my own ideas about what bridges symbolize were changed forever. When my fellow survivor Nicole Eugene interviewed Bernie Porche, he stressed this.
We went through so much on that bridge that it's a crying shame that people don't know. And I want them to know because it was a shame the way we was being treated.
Now in New Orleans, when people talk about bridges, they often mean freeway and highway overpasses. Literally thousands and thousands of people were stranded for days on these overpasses. While we've heard a great deal about the horrors and hardships of the Superdome and the Convention Center, those people who were stuck on bridges were in equally desperate straits, or even worse.
What went on this bridge was way beyond what happened at the Superdome.
Frightened New Orleanians first looked to the bridges as islands of hope. They had the realistic expectation, and in many cases, the spoken promise of rescue. When Joan Britton's family was evacuated, they were told that the bridge would be a stepping stone to safety. The officers in charge made promises.
They said, "We're taking you to the bridge." He said, "There's gonna be a bus." Then they carried the elderly people to the boats and they carried the children. And the rest had to get in the water. And it was just so much of water that we couldn't even recognize our directions, which way to go to the bridge. So they brought us to the bridge, and it was very dark. And when we got to the bridge, there was one police car with its lights on, parked towards the boat.
But the police presence soon disappeared. The spoken promise became a broken one.
And we just hated to see all of them pulled away. So when they pulled off, they just left all of us sitting on I-10 in the dark. Nobody never came back.
When the floodwaters failed to subside, more and more families sought refuge on the overpasses. When Sharon Washington realized that she was beyond rescue, she turned to sustaining her young and ailing grandson.
When we met on I-10, that's when my grandson James got kind of weak, and we had to give him a little water because he kept on like passing out. So I had took two blankets from my house, and I made like a little tent over our head to keep the sun because it was so hot that people was just dropping and it was just passing out. And I took that, and when I put it over and I gave him some water, he came back a little bit.
82-year-old Dorothy Griffin is convinced that she would never have survived the ordeal without the heroic actions and special care of her son and grandson, who endured the struggle with her.
And they had people that was dead. They had them laying on chairs over there at the foot of the overpass by one of the posts in the back. And they had I saw at least five of them dead on the chairs. People just brought them back there. But I never would have made it had it been for my son and my grandson. I guess I'd have been on a chair somewhere.
Days after the storm, as the number of stranded people increased and aid was non-existent, the conditions became even more dire. Bernie Porche remembers.
At this time, we had thousands of people on the bridge. I mean, they couldn't use the restroom. Anything they had to do it on the bridge. And you got people sleeping on the bridge and people's stuff just rolling down on them. I'm telling you, you had dead bodies on the bridge. You had people try to survive this bridge action that's going on.
As the numbers multiplied, Ordinary citizens felt trapped, abandoned, and almost imprisoned. At this point, the bridges even became holding cells for inmates evacuated from local jails. Deputy Sheriff Vincent Trotter recalls.
After the storm passed, the water had receded some, and we knew that we had to get the inmates out. We hurried them out of the jails to safety. We had to actually walk them over to another facility where the boats could actually get in and take them to what was known as the Broad Bridge. After the prisoners were evacuated from the building, they came back and they moved us to the same bridge with the prisoners, where we slept for 3 days. In shifts, we guarded the inmates there on the bridge, you know, until they brought in buses to take them out. And that was rough.
Finding himself a prisoner now, Vincent had to act. He had to save himself by escaping the bridge.
After the 3 days were over with was when I decided I couldn't take it no more. And the inmates were going over the side of the bridge, and I asked one of the officers that had come in to take the inmates out, am I allowed to climb over that scaffold? And he told me, you got a badge. You're allowed to do anything you want to do. Okay. So I talked to my ranking officer. I said, I'll see you when I see you. And I walked from that bridge to my house in Algiers. Didn't know if I had a house to go to. I just knew I couldn't stay on that bridge.
Like Vincent Trotter, Bernie Porche, Dorothy Griffin, Joan Britton, and Sharon Washington all sought refuge from Katrina on the bridges of New Orleans. Little did they know that seeking safe haven would be the greatest trial they faced during the storm's ordeal. But unlike Vincent, none of them had a home to go home to. In the long run, they all made their journey to Houston, where they are rebuilding their lives today. Failed by their rescuers, they became their own source of strength, and they created their own bridge to a new life. Surviving Katrina and Rita in Houston is a collaboration of the University of Houston, the Texas Commission on the Arts, the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress, and the American Folklore Society. Radio presentations have been funded in part by the Houston Endowment and the Houston Arts Alliance. For more information on the Surviving Katrina and Rita in Houston project, visit our website, www.katrinaandrita.org.